Mr. Castiglione?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Castiglione.
Thank you very much. My name is John Castiglione. I represent Lindsay Bishop and Carolyn Clark. This case is before the court on appeal of the district court's grant of summary judgment to Detective Tony Arcuri in the city of San Antonio over the recommendation of the magistrate. On the night of April 28, 2009, Detective Arcuri and a team of San Antonio police officers used a battering ram to enter Ms. Bishop and Ms. Clark's home. There's no dispute that Detective Arcuri and his team did not knock and announce their presence prior to entry. There are three issues on this appeal. First, whether Detective Arcuri's undisputed failure to knock and announce violated the Fourth Amendment. As the court is aware, officers may only dispense with a knock at the door when they have a reasonable suspicion based on particularized facts that knocking would be futile or risk either violence or evidence destruction. Second issue on appeal is whether Detective Arcuri is entitled to qualified immunity at this stage. And third, the issue on this appeal is whether there are facts in the record when viewed in the light most favorable to appellants that would allow a jury to conclude that the forced entry into Ms. Bishop and Ms. Clark's home resulted from a San Antonio Police Department custom or policy of conducting no-knock raids in searches for drugs, even in the absence of exigent circumstances. The magistrate, which provided over this case from the very beginning, denied summary judgment to the defendants on all three issues, and the district court declined to take that recommendation, and I'd like to discuss each of these topics in turn. First, just a very brief bit of background. On the night of April 27, 2009, Detective Arcuri was purportedly contacted by a confidential informant who told him, allegedly, that another man named Randy was cooking and selling methamphetamine at the plaintiff's address. He made no mention of either Ms. Bishop or Ms. Clark. Now, by Detective Arcuri's own testimony, this Randy has never been established. We don't know if he really exists. The next afternoon, Detective Arcuri undertook a cursory investigation beginning at approximately 3 p.m. in the afternoon. He checked.
Did the confidential informant have any relationship with either of the women living at the house?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, and there's certainly nothing in the record suggesting it.
This seems a little strange.
I agree, Your Honor. In any event, Detective Arcuri checked the property taxes and utility records of the house. There's no mention of a Randy. There was no indication of prior criminal activity or anything amiss about the house whatsoever, or the women who were paying the utilities, Ms. Bishop or Ms. Clark. He ran the license plate of the car, no suggestion of a Randy, no tie of criminal activity to the car. He checked municipal court and police records, again, for the address, nothing amiss. Allegedly surveilled the house for several hours. There's no indication of a Randy. No man was seen entering or exiting the premises. No indication of drug activity. Nevertheless, Detective Arcuri did secure a warrant, and in that process, he completed a standard police checklist, noting that the suspect was likely not armed, likely had no violent criminal history, likely had no violent tendencies, and likely had no gang affiliation. Now, Detective Arcuri and his expert at deposition would later confirm that they had no facts indicating a heightened risk of violence upon execution of the warrant. At approximately 9:30 that night, the police, led by Detective Arcuri, broke down the door of Ms. Bishop and Ms. Clark's home without knocking and announcing their presence. Now, Detective Arcuri agrees that there were no outward signs of activity in the home suggesting that the occupants were aware of the police or doing anything suspicious, or that any evidence of destruction of evidence was taking place. Now, this is unsurprising because, as the court is aware, there was nothing amiss in the home. No drugs were found. Drug dogs were brought to the property. There was nothing suspicious going on. The officers found Ms. Bishop in a state of undress and Ms. Clark tending to her dogs in the backyard. Nothing amiss. Ms. Bishop and Ms. Clark were handcuffed for over an hour. And while there were allegations in the complaint regarding the behavior of the officers during the detention, those aren't at issue on this appeal. However, there is no dispute that this was the wrong house and the wrong people. Now, under longstanding Supreme Court precedent and the precedent of this court, as the court knows, police must knock and announce their presence before entering, and the only exception relevant to this case is when exigent circumstances exist. Now, such no-knock forced entries are permissible only when the police have specific, particularized facts that there's a heightened risk of violence or some danger of evidence destruction.
The district court pretty much stopped saying no clear right. Isn't that correct?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
The district court pretty much stopped saying we don't see that a clear right was violated here.
Right? The district court held that there was no dispute, essentially, that there was a reasonable jury could not find that there was no evidence of heightened risk of violence or evidence destruction here. That is in complete contradiction to what the magistrate found. Here, as I said before, Detective Arcuri doesn't deny that there was no heightened risk of violence upon executing the warrant. And he claims that the warrant was executed in a no-knock fashion because there was some risk of evidence destruction or concealment. I think there's two things to say about that. One, I think there is a disputed question of fact whether or not Detective Arcuri actually had a basis to believe that the amount of drugs in the house were small enough to permit concealment or destruction if the officers waited upon the knock and announce. Detective Arcuri said two things in his depositions in the record. First, he said that the sale was a small amount, and so therefore he believed that if he knocked and announced, the evidence could be destroyed. He also said that the confidential informant told him that this Randy was allowing people to manufacture drugs in the house. Now, obviously, a drug manufacturing operation is not easily concealable. So I think there's a very real question here as to what Detective Arcuri actually believed at the time he secured the warrant. But now, as the court is aware, even if it is true that Detective Arcuri believed that there was a small amount of drugs in the house, that's not enough under the law of the Supreme Court and the law of this court to support a no-knock entry in the absence of any other particularized facts that would indicate a heightened risk of violence, again, or destruction of evidence. Cases, the Richards case, U.S. v. Banks from the Supreme Court, cases that were discussed in briefing like Cantu, Valdez III, and Michalik, each of those cases held squarely that the suspected presence of drugs, even in small amounts, in a home is not enough on its own to allow for a no-knock entry.
When you say each held squarely, part of the sort of intellectual problem here is it took the Supreme Court four tries over 10 years to get this right established. So although you can say Wilson was unanimous, and I guess Richards was too, the court struggles, then Banks, then Hudson. After Banks, you don't have to knock 20 seconds, right? And in Richards, the court says, yeah, the right is what we said it was in Wilson, but it's this super low standard reasonable suspicion. So in a way, you can say it may be a clear right, but they didn't even announce it until 95. And then they've really been going back and back, and cops don't know what is this low reasonable suspicion standard.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think the sequence of events in Richards, the court said that there cannot be a per se rule that any drug warrants allowed for no-knock entry. I think Banks is consistent with that. In Banks, the question was how long after the knock could an officer wait upon hearing.
Is this the same level of proof you got to show to stop someone and frisk somebody, Terry?
Reasonable suspicion.
Yeah, it's the same. Do you know of any 1983 case that's awarded liability because of a finding that cops didn't have reasonable suspicion to frisk?
To stop and frisk, I
What about here? Have you found any case where there was an actual award of 1983 liability because the police officer didn't knock and announce?
I'd have to go back and check. But
do you know of any?
Not off the top of my head, Your Honor.
This would be the first time there'd be an award.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor. We're here on summary judgment, and the issue in Cantu was whether the case could go to a jury. And this court held squarely in Cantu that the mere presence of drugs on the basis of a confidential informant tip was not enough to support the no-knock entry. So it could very well be the case that...
Was that an exclusionary criminal case, or was that a
1983 case? That was a 1983 case, Your Honor. And so, but you're right, a lot of these cases come up in the suppression context, and I think that was the issue in Hudson, too. But I think Hudson...
The Supreme Court may not have given police officers... You agree, it's not a high bar.
I agree.
Okay, and if you had to squeeze particularized facts here, they do rely on a layout to the house. Now, one could say, well, every house has a layout. Do you know where in the record there is this layout?
I'll get the record site for you there. But I think there's another...
I mean, I'm squeezing facts, but a dog, right? The police officers knew that there was a dog, and that turned out to be true?
The police officers did not know that there was a dog in the house.
Okay, I thought that was correct.
I don't believe so, but...
And the third thing is, and I admit this is against the arguments they're making, but the fact they knew it was a meth lab, that's traffickers. In Richards, it's the Supreme Court's joking about, well, what if it's a grandmother that does a personal transaction? That isn't what they have here. They've got a statement that it's a meth lab and dog. In other words, I don't agree that unknowns are the same as what the Supreme Court sort of laughed out of court when Wisconsin said any personal deals going on. This is a more dangerous fact pattern.
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. I think there's a couple of things. First, there's a very, very much an issue of fact as to whether Detective Arcuri actually believed that there was a meth lab.
Right.
He himself has made that an issue of fact. He has said that the reason he went in was because he suspected a small amount of drugs were at issue here.
He said they were cooking.
The confidential...
It's not a meth lab to be cooking, right?
I suppose perhaps I'm not well-versed enough in the preparation of methamphetamine.
You can cook cocaine to make crack.
Certainly, Your Honor. Yeah, and I think the confidential informant also told him that Randy was distributing iodine crystals to other people there. But I'd like to address your point about the layout of the house. I think that is a disputed issue of fact as well. What is not disputed is that the confidential informant said he only entered the living room of the home.
Right.
And so, but there's nothing in the Warren affidavit or nothing in the records saying what he told him about the layout of that living room. But I think it's very much the case that the confidential informant didn't go to the rest of the house, knew nothing about the rest of the house, didn't give a particular description of the living room itself, at least nothing that Detective Arcuri has ever told anyone. So in regards to the layout, I think it's very much a disputed issue of fact about what Detective Arcuri knew at the time before he executed the warrant. Now, after he entered the home, a layout of the house was drafted, filling in where the bathroom was and where the bedrooms were and so forth. But he didn't know any of that prior to entering the home.
Second point, the qualified immunity.
Yes.
Does the law say we look at the fact that his supervisor said this is okay, and then a defense expert comes in and says we do it? And that may compromise San Antonio's position, but there's part of me that's thinking, does that go to the objective reasonableness of his determination?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't believe we've seen any cases from this circuit suggesting that qualified immunity is either appropriate or not based on the approval of a superior officer here. I think it doesn't ultimately change the analysis, though, because Detective Arcuri, and this gets back to what we were discussing before, that I think all these cases that have been cited in these briefs, all of them are entirely consistent, both the cases that we've cited and the cases that Appalese have cited, starting from Richards. In every single case where the no-knock entry has been approved, there's been some sort of plus factor, if you will, above and beyond the mere presence of drugs. They have not cited a single case where it is solely the suspicion of drugs in the home that supports a no-knock entry. Now, I should say that Detective Arcuri has taken the position that the after-the-fact position that he believed that there's a small amount of drugs being sold in the house. The confidential informant never said that, at least not from his warrant affidavit at the time. The confidential informant said, I purchased drugs at the home. So Detective Arcuri didn't know how many drugs were in the house. It could be a larger amount, and this gets us back to the meth lab issue. But, I mean, I think there are facts all over the place here about what Detective Arcuri knew and when he knew it. But I think the important point for qualified immunity is that this court has previously held on a number of occasions that when there are questions of facts surrounding whether an entry into home is reasonable or not, qualified immunity isn't appropriate at the summary judgment stage.
The municipal liability issue, right? I think the problem here is that their written policy explicitly said what you say it doesn't say, which is we do have to have exigent circumstances.
I respectfully disagree. We don't deny that the written policy is on its face constitutional. We say there's a custom.
So at best we get a remand, which your reply brief implied. I read it to mean that's what you think you should happen.
Your Honor, I think that's generally right. I would say that as a practical matter, if there is a remand of the district court decides against us and dismisses on summary judgment the claims against the city, we're going to be right back here discussing the same issue of municipal liability. We think the court has everything it needs at this point to look and to see whether summary judgment was appropriate as to the city. You're reviewing the record de novo. The facts are what they are. Discovery is over. If this court finds that there's a reasonable issue of fact that needs to go to a jury, we'll go to a jury. If this court finds that there is no issue of fact, then there is none. We're going to do this one way or the other. And so we think on this record it's appropriate for the court to rule on municipal liability here. Another important point that I would just raise is that the district court here was sitting essentially in an appellate capacity for this entire case. The magistrate was the one who handled it, saw the evidence, wrote his report, and the district court declined to reach the question of municipal liability because it didn't find an underlying constitutional violation. But we think the court here today can make that determination on its own. But I certainly understand what Your Honor is saying.
You're pretty confident that there's no statement by Arcuri below that he knew there was a guard dog?
Now that you've said this, I'm not as confident as I was, but we will certainly check, and I have a little bit of time on rebuttal, and we will get that answer for you. But I don't know if that necessarily changes the analysis. He's never said that he believed it was dangerous because there was a dog. He said it was dangerous because there were drugs.
Well, he did say one sentence. The primary point was too little, it could be disposed. But then he did say, I'm worried about the safety of my men.
I agree he said that, Your Honor. But he also, his own expert said that there were no facts suggesting that there was a risk of danger. So he can say as long as he wants that I thought there was a danger, but the cases are clear that the presence of drugs is not enough to make it legally significant that he thought there might be danger. There are no facts suggesting that there were danger, and we think that's what the cases say. And I have 5 seconds, but I'll defer. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rawls?
Mr. Frigerio, Your Honor, representing the City of San Antonio. Oh, okay. May it please the court. I represent, my name is Charles Frigerio, and I represent the City of San Antonio, Texas. In this case, the Honorable United States District Judge Orlando Garcia granted both the City of San Antonio and Detective R. Curry's motion for summary judgment. He specifically found that the destruction of evidence exception applied with regard to the knock and announce general rule that is applied at common law. He specifically found the facts, and he went a particularized enunciation in his order, talking about the accuracy of the confidential informant in the past, how the confidential informant had described not only Randy but the location in question. And he relied also on the fact, and I believe it's important, Your Honors, that the Mustang, the same Mustang, was outside in the driveway at the time the buy was made of the methamphetamine, and the fact that there was a small amount. That is in the record. That is a very small amount. I believe it was referred to like as a dime pack, but it was a small amount that was purchased by the confidential informant. When the confidential informant purchased that small amount of methamphetamine, he was in the living room, only in the living room, and that's all he saw and that's all he purchased. When the execution of the search warrant was taking place, the same silver Mustang was also in the driveway. That gave rise, with these factors, to the reasonable suspicion that Judge Orlando Garcia found as to why that exception applies. Now, I cite the court to the case in our brief, United States versus Washington, because it's an interesting case. And ours is a little bit on the flip side of it, because in our case, we have the destruction of evidence exception. In Washington, they looked at both the safety exception of the officers and the destruction of evidence exception. Ultimately, in Washington, this Fifth Circuit held that officer safety was the exception. But it's interesting to point out that that case dealt with a halfway house that had no plumbing, the only windows or any means of egress were in the front. The windows were all in the front of this house, and we're dealing with a liquid codeine in that particular circumstance. So there was no way really of disposing of the codeine. There was no plumbing, and if they were going to dispose of it, they would be disposing of it in the windows, which is where the police came in that particular search. The court said we're going to hold the safety exception as applying, but it said the specifically, the destruction of evidence exception would be a close call. Now, I would submit to the court, if that is a close call where there's no plumbing and the only egress was one way where the police officers were coming, that this case definitely is not close at all, but it does hold reasonable suspicion, as Judge Orlando Garcia held. Because of that, and I refer to the court.
You cited Washington and Lindberger to tell us that we don't require particularized findings. That's what you said on page 7 in the summary, page 13 and 14. You didn't say it's because the dicta says disposability. You said we don't require particularized proof in the case specifically.
I didn't believe I said particularized proof, Your Honor. I believe that. What I was going to refer to, if I'd lost my train of thought, there was a question regarding the diagram that I believe is important. That's not found in the record at 877.
I just want to say legally, I don't see Washington and Lindberger at all as suggesting that you don't have to have very particularized fact-specific proof of an exigency in each case.
You do. I agree with that, okay. Your Honor. So, I agree you have to have that.
The only issue is, what is there here more than what Wisconsin was asking for in Richards? You've got the disposability of drugs. That's what R. Curry said. That's flatly contrary to what the Supreme Court said unanimously.
But Judge Garcia, and again, in looking at how he enunciated this, it's not only just the small amount of drugs. It's the diagram, which is found again in the record at 877, that he did draw and was part of the operational plan, which is required under 504 of the City of San Antonio operational plan. So he knew the diagram. He knew that in this particular residence, the living room was in the front, the bathroom and kitchen were in the rear, and it led, again, to easy destruction of evidence. That and the fact that the small amount that was purchased by the confidential informant was also that Mustang was present, and the Mustang was again present at the time of the execution of the warrant. So you have that reasonable suspicion, as Judge Orlando Garcia found, that there was the potential for destruction of evidence. There was enough for reasonable suspicion. And again, as you pointed out, Judge, like a Terry pat.
You know, strange car in front of the house and bathroom somewhere in the small house. That really is what a unanimous Supreme Court said won't work.
Well, no, it's the same silver Mustang. It was the same silver Mustang, okay. The same small amount of drug.
Is there anything in the record to show that San Antonio or Arcuri or anybody talked about Richards and understood how conclusive the Supreme Court was that just the fact that there's a small amount of drugs in there does not allow you to batter a door down? Is there anything in the record that shows your city is telling police officers that?
Rule 504 and the rules and regulations of the city of San Antonio, I think it's specifically, and I think they've conceded.
In the affidavits, does anybody say, we understand the restraint a unanimous Supreme Court set as to when we can go in without knocking and announcing?
Well, not that they talked about the specific case of Richardson, but they talked about the policy which tracks Richardson. And it specifically holds it to two exigent circumstances. And I believe appellants have conceded the fact that it's constitutional on its face. Our policy is constitutional, which raises another issue with regard to municipal liability. As the court knows, the policy is constitutional, so therefore what they're trying to establish is a custom of the city of San Antonio, which was unconstitutional. And I believe that the case precedent, although Judge Orlando Garcia did not go into that because he held there was no constitutional violation. Therefore, we didn't get into it because, as Los Angeles versus Heller dictates, if there's no constitutional deprivation by the officer, then the municipality can't be held liable irregardless.
But isn't the problem that the officer, Curry, said he didn't know what he didn't know? It was the great unknown, and that's why they battered the door down? You're supposed to know something.
No, one of the reasons he mentioned the reason he didn't know the violent propensities of the individual selling the drugs. That's what he didn't know. And the fact he didn't know whether he was violent or not, that is a factor that would go to the safety analysis. Because we raised actually both the safety exception and the destruction of evidence exception. Judge Garcia. Well, it wasn't that he didn't know anything. He didn't know the violent propensities of this individual that they were dealing with.
Randy, there's no suggestion that Randy had a gun, right?
Or that he was in
no.
there.
Was there any suggestion that he had a criminal record of violence?
They didn't know
no.
that.
Any suggestion the residents of this house had any criminal record of violence?
No, Your Honor.
No, there's nothing about violence.
And the question with regard to Randy is the court brought up, and although this is somewhat inference and speculation, but it came out in the deposition, the homeowner that the individuals rented from had a son that met the description of Randy, and when we deposed the plaintiffs, they were not home at the particular time. That would have led to have Randy would have had the opportunity, if indeed that's who it was, the son of the landlord as the person. But, Your Honor, we would ask that the court affirm, minute 47, I'm sorry, I thought it was red. With regard to municipal liability, I was going to speak to the court on that. Since the policy itself is constitutional, then the only, under Bennett versus Slidell and those other cases, we're talking about a custom. There's no evidence that there is a custom of unconstitutionality. As this court knows, the only case, I believe the Fifth Circuit has ever ruled on with regard to custom would be Webster versus Houston. And that was a heavy, heavy burden to show where there was an unconstitutional custom. In this particular case, The plaintiffs, the appellants, rely on statistics, and this court has held in Pineda versus Houston.
Well, they didn't just rely on statistics, the 85% number. They had your own higher-level officials in the San Antonio Police Force say, we've looked at this, and this is good. This is consistent with our policy.
But those are statistics. Who is to say that each one of those 85% weren't reasonable suspicion? And there's no analysis.
But there was an explicit statement that what was occurred here is consistent with our San Antonio policy. That was testimony.
From Chief McManus.
Right.
Yes. And I would also, as I pointed out in the brief, that the chief of police in the city of San Antonio, because it's a home rule city, is responsible to his city manager and the city manager responsible to the council. I believe that the policymaker for the city of San Antonio is not Chief McManus, but the city council of the city of San Antonio. So I do not believe that there's proof as the record stands now, of a custom that the City of San Antonio had an unconstitutional policy. And I would ask the court to affirm the summary judgment granted to the City of San Antonio and Detective Arcuri. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rawls this time.
Yes. Good afternoon, Your Honor. I'm Mark Rawls. I'm here representing Detective Tony Arcuri in this case. Detective Arcuri, at the time that he made his, at the time that he searched this residence, had specific information from a confidential informant who had purchased a small amount of methamphetamine in that house that where the search was conducted within 48 hours of the time that he actually conducted the search. The confidential informant that he got that information from was a confidential informant that over roughly the 5 years that Detective Arcuri had worked in this particular section of the repeat offenders program had provided Detective Arcuri reliable information on 20 or more occasions. Detective Arcuri was completely justified in relying on that information provided from the confidential informant in asking for and obtaining the warrant to search the house for a small amount of methamphetamine. And the in addition to just the fact that he had this long history with the confidential informant, everything that the confidential informant told him in the long run bore out to be correct. First of all, that the layout, or told him about the living room, that it was sold in the living room. He told him about this individual named Randy, told him about the silver Mustang, gave him a layout of the premises, the direction the premises faced, everything roughly that he told Detective Arcuri was in fact correct. Detective Arcuri, based upon that information, applied for and received a warrant to search this home for methamphetamine alone. There was no request for, there was no granting of a warrant for the search of the house for anything larger, anything other than methamphetamine. That is, no cooking operation, no lab, nothing other than methamphetamine. So it's all consistent with the fact that what he was looking for was exactly what his confidential informant had told him existed there, which is a small amount of methamphetamine.
Okay, so the search is fine, but where's the exigency?
The exigency, Your Honor, and maybe I'm reading Richards incorrectly, but the exigency in my mind is the fact that because it was a small amount of methamphetamine and because he knew it was a small amount of methamphetamine, it was easily disposed of or it was easily concealed. Even if the law doesn't require necessarily disposal of the evidence, inhibition of the, it's not the right word, but of the investigative process itself and the gathering of evidence itself. So it doesn't really even have to be disposed of. It just, if it's a small amount that could be concealed, that's sufficient. But in this house, obviously, there's running water in the kitchen and the bathrooms, and right. It doesn't take...
Those, if you listen to the oral argument, Richards, that's exactly what was argued to the Supreme Court by Wisconsin. They could flush it down the toilet, and a small amount could be, and not a single justice accepted that.
Well, but what they had was a blanket exception, Your Honor. It wasn't...
Why isn't yours always, if a small amount and there's plumbing, you can go in without knocking? What have you said to me that's more than that?
Your Honor, if it's... Well, you've got a good point. But I think that that's not necessarily a blanket exception. What they had was a blanket exception to the felony... search or the execution of search warrant for a felony amount of drugs.
I asked opposing counsel the question, I think. Do you know, on just specific to Detective Arcuri, he did get the approval before he did the no-knock of a supervisor, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Do you know of any case that says that just as to his individual liability, that alters our assessment of objective reasonable?
Well, I don't think, Your Honor, no. I think that but the question remains on the second prong of qualified immunity, or whichever order you address it in nowadays, The question remains, would or could a reasonably objective police officer under the same or under the totality of the circumstances with which they were faced have acted the same way? And certainly that's evidence, in my opinion, if your supervisor says that, yes, what you're doing is reasonable, then it seems to me that's objective evidence or evidence that you're being objectively reasonable in effecting the search without knocking and announcing.
The magistrate didn't say, it wasn't even asked to opine on whether nighttime was okay or no knock, right? The warrant just says go.
That's correct. That's correct. But, Your Honor, so we really have, there are two issues here. One, I think, as far as Detective Arcuri is concerned, of course, that's first of all whether there was a constitutional violation at all. And we believe that because, as you pointed out, Your Honor, the standard is so low, even, and this, and of course, in Hudson was after, decided after Richards. In Hudson, in the Hudson case, they said that the standard, all you needed was a mere reasonable suspicion. And the district court went along with that. In fact, italicized the fact that it said mere reasonable suspicion. And that's what they had. That is the rule here that they had. I mean, that is what they had. And the rule is that as long as you have a mere reasonable suspicion that you can articulate some facts in support of, then that's sufficient to justify the entry without knocking and announcing. And that's, I believe the evidence is very clear that that's what they had here based on the confidential informant alone. And I think that's sufficient. I'll address just the issue of the officer's safety for just a second, although I know that there's no evidence in the record of what Detective Arcuri and his crew knew about this Randy fellow. It seems to me, and maybe I'm just off base on this, but it seems to me that it's just as dangerous to not know information about this individual as it is to know information about the individual, simply because not knowing whether he is dangerous, not knowing whether he's armed, not knowing whether he has a criminal history or not, puts them at a disadvantage of not knowing how he's liable to react at the time that they breach the door. So I think it was reasonable for them to believe that there was some danger that they were faced with. By the way, there was a dog. He did say that he saw some dogs out front in his deposition testimony. Let me turn to the qualified immunity analysis in this case, and that is that we haven't really, as we pointed out in our brief, we haven't really found any Fifth Circuit cases that really address the qualified immunity analysis under the knock and announce rule. But again, I think the law being that an officer just has to be objectively reasonable in determining whether or not there should be or he can carry out a search is the law. And of course, the 11th Circuit case we cited says that even arguable reasonable suspicion is enough to satisfy that requirement. And in this case, of course, Detective Arcuri had not only his sergeant's approval, but also the chief of police's approval. Our expert witnesses' opinion that his actions were the actions of an objectively reasonable officer under the totality of the circumstances with which he was faced. And so I believe even if the court were to find a constitutional violation, I think that the court should find that Detective Arcuri is entitled to qualified immunity because he was objectively reasonable in his actions in carrying out this search. And part of that, I agree with what you said earlier, Your Honor, and that is that how are police officers supposed to know? I mean, if there's a blanket exception.
But the trouble with that is, you know, the Fourth Amendment protection exists to keep people from having their privacy violated suddenly. You know, it's certainly more efficient to let them go in every time, although you do end up with terrible, tragic shootings. So the unknown argument, I understand, the less you know, but the sooner you say, the less you know, the more you can dispense with the Fourth Amendment, that becomes really a bad incentive system.
Well, I'm not actually asking for a blanket exception on that, but I think that in this particular case, I don't think that you can just disregard the fact that he had no knowledge regarding this individual. I think it's fair for him to have some concerns about the safety of his team members, given that they didn't know anything about Randy. Your Honors, I would request that the court affirm the district court's opinion and on both the no constitutional violation and the qualified immunity for Detective R. Curie. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Castiglione.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to just hit a couple of the points that came up. First, you were correct. Detective R. Curie was told by the informant that there was a dog in the house, but I think importantly, he didn't actually know at the time he executed the warrant that there was a dog. Dog could have been gone, I suppose. There's nothing in the record indicating that he thought there was a dog in there, or even what kind of dog it was, big, little.
And he primarily went in because the drugs were so small. He didn't really emphasize the danger issue anyway.
Right. I think that's right. On the second point, on the issue of the diagram of the house, their own expert admitted in deposition that the diagram of the house came after the search, after they had been in the house, and that's on records page 1112. I think a lot of what you discussed was this policy argument that the unknowns have any weight in this analysis at all. And I think, Judge Higginson, you made the point that it's not people's duty to somehow make it known to officers outside their house that there's nothing amiss, that there's no danger in their house. I mean, that's the whole point of the knock and announce requirement. A lot was made of the unknowns on Randy. They didn't know if Randy was in the house. I think that's a very important point here. They maybe assumed
he was supposed to meet them, and then he didn't.
The confidential informant was supposed to meet them at the house,
right, and he did not,
which I think is just another piece of evidence suggesting that this was not a reasonable entry. The confidential informant, upon which he's basing every single thing about this search, didn't meet him at the house. So, in any event, the notion that there was anything I think meaningful about what the confidential informant told him about the car, the layout of the house, the orientation on the street. That's all stuff that can be seen from the outside of the house. The car was sitting in the driveway. The particular house is on a particular corner facing this way. The numbers on the outside of the house. That says nothing about whether evidence can be destroyed, whether there's a risk of violence. That's all something that this confidential informant, to the extent he exists, could see from the outside of the house, and none of it has really anything to do with the issues in this case. Another point I think is worth emphasizing, the notion that this confidential informant had never steered him wrong in 20-some-odd instances before. He steered him wrong in this case. He told him that there was meth in the house, and there was no meth in the house. He told him there was Randy in the house. There was no Randy in the house. Detective R. Curie below, reasonably or not, made a big deal about resisting discovery into the identity of this confidential informant and his history, which perhaps can be justified, but the notion that there was any discovery into whether this confidential informant actually exists or never steered him wrong in the past is something we're taking on the word of Detective R. Curie, and certainly a jury should be able to look at those statements by Detective R. Curie and determine whether they are credible or not. One issue that came up, and I had said earlier that the Cantu case was a 1983 case. I apologize, that was a suppression case. Mm-hmm. But the Michalik case was a 1983 case, and that was a case in which the court denied summary judgment on the qualified immunity issue because there were questions of fact regarding the reasonableness of the entry. The case was also discussed in briefing, the Warnecki case. Well, that was a child protection case.
What about his municipal liability point? Can you get to that?
Certainly, Your Honor. Is there a particular?
Well, his argument that the testimony that this is comporting with their policy wouldn't control the analysis, and that the written policy is quite clear that they've got to have exigent circumstances.
Well, I think the written policy, the cases, I think, are clear. The written policy can say what it says. The question is what is happening on the street. The policy of, I think it's.
So what's the best case that states that the custom controls?
If you're honest
with
me.
That's right. Keep going. You don't have much time.
Okay. But I think there are cases like that. The Williams case we discussed about what happened, the Grand Staff case, where there was officers in a particular instance descended on a farmhouse, I believe it was, and ended up shooting the owner of the house because he came out to assist the police. In that case, the court found it meaningful that nothing happened to the officers after the incident, that the city did not discipline them, that essentially put the okay on what they did. And that was evidence of the policy that could be taken to the jury. That's exactly what happened here. We have the Chief McManus, we have the the immediate former chief, Alberto Ortiz, saying that this was done in conformance with the policy. And a reasonable jury could look at that and say, yes, this is the city admitting what the policy is, and that in this case, the officers were following that policy, or custom, I should say. And that is, I think, fairly tight evidence that at least a reasonable jury could find liability in this case on that issue. And I think I will just make one last point. If their rule is correct, that it's just the small amount of drugs that can mean that an officer can go in without knocking and announcing his presence, or if there's some existential question about what he believed at the summary judgment stage such that qualified immunity applies, then they always win. There's literally no circumstance in which someone who has their house wrongly broken into can proceed to trial. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Let's go to adjourn until